My name is Adam Kopic. I'm a pastor in Montgomery, Alabama at Young Meadows Presbyterian Church. I've been there for, I think, 15 years, or I've been at Young Meadows for 10 years. I've been in Montgomery for a little over 15. I wanted to show a little picture for my family and Alex's. My wife, Stephanie, is a Cajun. She's from New Orleans. Oh, so I've already blown it. My wife is from New Orleans, and she is every bit of a Cajun, so that makes life exciting. And so I'm a North Alabama boy. These are our three kids, Grady, Grace, and Caleb. And the Lord has really just blessed me to have some different experiences in what I feel like is a very short opportunity of life and ministry in Him, in Montgomery and just in the kingdom. And it's been a really blessing to be a coach, to be a teacher, to be a youth minister, to just be a counselor in people's lives, to be a pastor. And so as we talk today, it's one of the things is so much out of my own and Alex's experiences. And one of the reasons I'm doing it with Alex today is because of the immense impact she has had as she introduces herself of what impact she has been on my journey of trying to be faithful to the Lord and for our family to even experience the grace of the Lord in Montgomery.
So my name's Alex Coker, and as Adam said, we are in Montgomery, Alabama. We go to Young Meadows Presbyterian, and I've been there for 29 years, which means I feel like I'm one of the oldest people there, but I'm the oldest in experience, but not age. And that's an interesting role to fill there. I've been through a lot of different seasons of ministry at Young Meadows. And then I spent 13 years on staff there. I was the women's director and then moved into some roles with small groups and visitor assimilation. And throughout that time, I'm also a biblical counselor. So I've been counseling for about 14 years. So about 2.5 years ago, I came off ministry staff in the midst of a really difficult season of ministry at Young Meadows and ultimately a church split. And I think I'm here because I am the don't do it the way I did it person. Like, if you want to have resilience in ministry, then do it differently than I did. So this is a lot of what I learned in that season. And now the Lord's given me some opportunities to minister to other pastors and ministry leaders in our area and because of the marvels of technology around the country. And just given me a real heart to see those of you who are still in the trenches every day be able to sustain your calling.
And one of the reasons is we start with a little bit of a why on talking about ministry resilience, and obviously having a seminar just before us with a near mirror topic shows just the challenge and the need. But one of the reasons I also like starting with a picture of our families is the reality that as we talk about resilience in ministry and thinking of how do we do this calling, it's the reality is it doesn't impact us only, it impacts our families. It impacts our staffs, it impacts our leaders, our whole congregations. And so what we're not going to talk about today is how to be more efficient with your time, to be more productive. It's not to get more squeezed out of you, but to in some ways lament together as we talk about some of this material is to hopefully come to a time for a Q&A at the end as well for things that we don't talk about because it's a topic that we could talk for hours and hours about. And each of you have your own stories and recognition of how the Lord has shown up in a very unique and particular way in a particular area of deep darkness in a way that you have experienced the Great Shepherd's care. And so, you know, when we talk today, it's not out of that we have mastered anything. And really, it's the things that have been most helpful to us along this journey.
So this verse became a little bit of a theme for me in hard season of ministry. You'll recognize the language, but maybe you're not familiar with the translation. This is from the Message, of course, Matthew 18, 28 to 30. I am going to read it because I love it so much. Are you tired, worn out, burned out on religion? Come to me, get away with me, and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. And that phrase, the unforced rhythms of grace, just resonated with me. It brings me to tears many times when I still think about it, because it felt so much like what that season of ministry did not feel like. because if you're reaching the place of burnout, everything begins to feel very forced. Everything begins to feel very structured and have to, right? And so we're going to refer back to this verse, and I want to say, like, what we don't want to talk about is just figuring out how to muscle through anymore. We don't want to talk about how we have to stay stuck in these places where we just feel like, what am I doing and why am I here? And we're going to throw a lot of information at you. One of the things I've wrestled with this talk is just like, we have so many different ideas. And in a sense, it's on purpose. I hope it doesn't feel too overwhelming. But in a sense, it's on purpose to see, like, even if you walk away with just one or two ideas of things that you can implement in this season of life, then we'll feel like, okay, you know, maybe you have a new tool in your toolbox. So it will feel like a lot. And then what we hope to do is give some time in the Q&A that if you feel like something's resonated and we haven't explained enough, we'd love to explain that. And we also want to offer a resource page with the QR code that Adam's created. So everything that we refer to, you'll be able to access.
Not to be environmentally sound, but I didn't print anything. So it'll be in that QR code. But I want to recognize, too, right from the beginning, what makes it so hard for us as ministry leaders, as leaders in our own families and communities, whatever, to even talk about the need for real resilience in a way that's beyond just muscling through or just trying to produce more. And, you know, as I was thinking about this, you know, I think about how we so often suffer in silence because we take things like take up your cross, you know, all who would follow me will come and die. And we over-spiritualize those in the sense that we think it does not include a self-care for the Imago Dei in which God has created us, that we think somehow that true ministry means I'm going to destroy myself for the sake of others instead of somehow thinking, how would the Lord so draw near and deal with me, grow me, protect me, care for me in such a way to actually be his embodied presence with other people. That we think that when we confess ways that we're struggling, that it seems like there's weakness. And we don't like feeling weakness in general, but we also, if we're in a particular area of leadership, we think people might not trust us the same if we really are honest about the ways we struggle, or we think people will begin to question our call or assume that we're questioning our call in the sense that we're already done. And so in one of my early ministry opportunities, I began to think I was burnout, which I actually was in the end. And as I was describing some of the things, they were already beginning to move towards the next step as well. So, you know, there is this reality that when we begin to articulate some of the ways we're struggling, we fear how others will perceive that. Or if we begin to talk about the need for self-care in any way, we think that's a worldly term or a worldly concept, and it's somehow unspiritual for God's people to think, what's the state of really of my heart, but of my body, of my mind, in such a way that I need help. And we're afraid to let others down. Like, if you're in this room, you want to be a helper for others. The reality is, if you're in a talk about resilience, that you actually want to endure. Otherwise, you're like, I'm out. And so there is this idea that we actually want to be helpful to others, and we long to not let them down. If you're an Enneagram 2 or a people pleaser, then you long so much. I saw a few amens silently. That you long to really be meaningful and helpful in other people's lives, and you think if you confess that you're in need, that you have let them down already.
Okay, so we're going to talk about some terms real quickly. We'll go through this pretty fast. Burnout, this is the World Health Organization, and they say that burnout is a syndrome conceptualized as resulting from chronic workplace stress that has not been successfully managed. It is characterized by three things: emotional exhaustion, which is feeling drained or depleted of emotional resources, depersonalization, developing a cynical or emotional detachment from your work or the people you serve, and then reduce personal accomplishment, which would be feeling ineffective, incompetent, or lacking a sense of achievement.
And as we go through some of these things, you'll begin to identify some specific phrases that you know really maybe speak to your heart. Like some of that are struggling to actually be okay with the work you've done, that struggle to have personal achievement, and to really see the work you've done as a gift to others, but also as your spiritual sacrifice. One of the things that Alex really helped me on early in ministry is the shame that came on a Sunday morning after teaching Sunday school, doing any sort of prayer in front of people, or to preach a sermon, is the shame that would come of what should I have said, what did I say, what's going to go home, especially when I was teaching youth, what's about to be said to their parents. And so to really struggle to really release that to the Lord, and it's really helpful to, you know, that ability of personal achievement is to have the ability to say, this is what the Lord's done. I give it as an offering, and I can't do anything else with it, and to trust the Lord, you know, blesses the preaching and the reading of His Word. And so emotional exhaustion, depersonalization, any of those things, we begin to recognize some of the ways. In a second, we'll flesh out even more. But the recognition of stress. Stress is the body's, and I'm always going to pull a Seinfeld somewhere, the physiological and psychological responses to perceived demands or threats, real or imagined. And what's really important to that is we comparative suffer all the time, and we begin to think what should stress us or what shouldn't based on what does or doesn't stress other people. And so one of the guilt and shame tactics for us in ministry is oftentimes thinking, I shouldn't be bothered by this. God blessed me with some incredible mentors that were high producers, and I often wondered, am I lesser or not enough some way, not worthy enough, because I struggle in a way that I don't think they do, that I see them produce in a way that I was facing some struggles in ministry that it didn't seem the same. And so we begin to comparative suffer. What's important in this is your body actually begins to respond to stress, whether it's an actual event or a perceived threat. And in light of that, some of those stressors, it could be all sorts of external or internal pressures, whether it be high expectations that others have communicated or perceived expectations that we have begun to adopt. That we begin to live in the shadow of what we think we should be. Conflict, both interpersonal among others, we think of church conflict, we think of staff challenges, split sessions, or betrayal in ministry. How maybe you invested so much in one couple or one person, and it kind of blew up in your face, and they began to speak differently about you to others. Or the internal conflict where you may struggle to feel on the same page with other people and you don't know what to do with it. You feel like somehow you're not in line with everybody else, whether that's a doctrine thing or whether that's you think how small groups should be or how you think Sunday lunch should be served. Like however you think there's an internal difference, there is this wrestle and you don't know what to do with it. Isolation, loneliness, your struggle to live in community and to really be known. The reality of lack of friendship is an epidemic in ministry. Financial organizational instability, compassion fatigue, secondary trauma, and the list could go on of what could be your particular stressors.
Okay, so we're going to look at some, I think, disheartening statistics. The first one from, 1,500 pastors leave the ministry each month due to burnout, conflict, or moral failure. 42% of pastors consider quitting full-time ministry in the past year, and 70% say they have a lower self-esteem now than when they started. 90% of pastors work more than 55 hours a week, and 80% feel ministry has negatively impacted their family. So if you're here because you are feeling burnout, I think maybe the good news is you're not alone. The bad news is that we're structuring, I think, pastoral ministry in a way that does not feel sustainable for most people in ministry. And then when we think about women in ministry, we see that the statistics are just as high, that there's a higher risk of burnout. Research indicates that 51% of women in church leadership are at a high risk of burnout compared to 40% of all pastors, and that women in ministry also have higher rates of emotional exhaustion, lack of confidence in their calling, and increase in stress since the pandemic. So we're seeing the same effects, if not greater, when women are serving in church staff and in leadership positions.
And definitely a lot of the statistics that we just gave were very specific to pastoral ministry, especially this first page. And sometimes we're tempted to think, well, yeah, but not us in the PCA. Paul Joyner gives this statistic from 2017 to 2023 that we've lost 9% of our pastors to tapping out, sending out, or transferring out. And we currently have over 300 pastors who are without call. And again, with these statistics, not many may be wanting to jump back in. But the reality is that these statistics even get worse when we start thinking of the different levels of your staff positions. And as Alex spoke to the statistic on women in ministry, this one's so challenging because we're not not able to really voice or be honest about some of the structures or systems we have in place that best suit everyone on staff to be on the same page, to feel valued, loved, appreciated. And so the challenges are across the board. So it's not just a pastoral epidemic, it's really across the board. And as we recognize this, some of the contributing factors, again, come from unrealistic expectations. And I think Alex would agree with this over the years, having an unclear job description and job clarity. And so for a lot of you, if I were to ask, no show of name, another amen, if we were to ask, like, do you really know your job description? Like, is it written? Is it in a document that you could actually go to? Or is it like, you know what you're supposed to do around here? And then people come and tell you Sunday after Sunday what they think you should be doing around here. And so that lack of job clarity leaves us operating in the fog, and that's really a pressing feeling. There's a lack of emotional support and ability to be vulnerable. That sometimes I've even had staff members at times say, like, this is a job, you know, so I'm coming in to fulfill a job. Well, that comes when we begin to treat it like we're not in the people business, or we're not in the salvation of sinners and the restoration of creation business. And so that lack of emotional attunement, support, and ability to see one another and labor alongside one another in a way that we've experienced the love of Christ in our own lives leads to this lack of emotional support. Work-life imbalance, the expectations of ministry that don't allow for people actually living lives, underdevelop emotional and spiritual resilience, not helping people grow in these areas. But then also the trauma and conflict that comes, whether it be betrayal, church hurt, some of those things I mentioned. I love this quote from Paul Joyner in some material that he's given some of our cohorts, in pastoral cohorts, as we're wrestling through this ourselves. He says, here is our premise for is that ministry is trauma. That's a bug, not a feature. But you have to account for it if you're going to make it in the long haul. To realize that trauma is not just the event that happens, it's how we internalize it and react to it over time. You know, one example I give is I experienced a really hard job interview at one point in ministry in a very particular room, in a very particular church, and I could not explain to people the feeling that went over my body every time I went into that room. And so other people may be like, well, and it's no big deal. You know people love you. You know people care about you. But nothing was done in that room to provide support and care in a moment that I felt very exposed and not a normal job situation. So I say that because what you're experiencing, sometimes people will talk why you shouldn't feel the way you feel, but the reality is your body remembered something very specific about how you did not receive care in that moment. Again, we'll read through these. The reality is it impacts our whole selves, body, soul, and our relationships. As far as our body, we experience hormonal imbalances, elevated cortisol levels, weakened immune system, sleep disturbances, fatigue, gastrointestinal issues, headaches. Often inflammatory issues, risk of heart disease, depression, headaches, migraines. The way my stress and trauma shows up most in me is I get terrible migraines. And in 21, there was a month of migraines that I began to experience. And my wife didn't really appreciate that because I'm useless when I get migraines. And so the reality is, again, how our health issues, like, is not just, hey, this is random. I need to take a better one-a-day vitamin. The reality is your body is screaming to you, something's not okay, and you need to listen. God has given us this beautiful central nervous system to actually tell us something's not okay.
Yeah, so my part of what caused me to finally pull the plug when church ministry was my body. Like, when I finally started to listen to what my body was telling me, I'd already struggled with chronic pain for years, struggled with inflammatory issues, and began to become more and more distanced from my body until I couldn't distance myself any further. And when my body said I had to quit, then I had to quit. And then what I experienced were these second two. Then I began to see the effects on my soul and on relationships, emotional exhaustion, compassion fatigue, anxiety, panic attacks, loss of joy and a sense of calling, cynicism and detachment, which I think is really dangerous when we're in shepherding roles. And then we see this effect on our relationships. As we said, there's a withdrawal from our families, the ones who we should be able to feel sustained by and pouring into and prioritize. We feel ourselves withdrawing from them and family and friends who know us well. We feel distant from God. We lose our sense of empathy and patience with ourselves and with others. And then we see an increase in conflict or isolation, And then I think we experience damage in church leadership, staff, elders, dynamics, where relationships start to break down as the corporate stress begins to reveal itself.
And you begin to see people not just question, do I want to be in a staff position? Do I want to be in ministry? But do I believe in the church? Do I believe that this organization, this organism that is the church, actually something I'm supposed to be a part of because I've experienced so much bad things from it? So we hear church hurt all the time, but the reality is a lot of it is what we're talking about here, is not having the ability to work through, like, what does resilience look like? How do we honestly be vocal and vulnerable about the ways that we have experienced particular emotional distress or and physical signs of this?
So I think you can see, like, we've focused largely on the problem up until this point. We're going to turn a corner. We're going to start to talk about some hope. But I hope you can remember the verses. Finally. I hope you can see why the verse meant so much to me. Like, this idea that Jesus is calling to us and asking us to walk with him in a way that's not forced, that's not heavy or ill-fitting, when burnout and stress makes everything feel heavy and ill-fitting. And so how do we live in this tension where we have this beautiful Jesus who is calling us into a ministry with his people, and yet the experience that we're having among his people doesn't feel like it reflects him? That was my biggest wrestle then and now. Like, I still wrestle with that to this day. It's like, how do we continue to see Jesus and who he really is and what he wants for his bride as we experience the day-to-day difficulty of ministry? So let's talk about resilience.
And again, like I said, we're not doing a how-to and be more productive, because our tendency actually is, if I'm feeling this, how can I just change, you know, get an AI assistant? How do I find the one tool in ministry? How do I find in the exhibit hall the one thing that will actually not make me feel the way I feel today? And so, as we're thinking about resilience, one definition is simply the ability to persevere, recover, or grow through hardship. But it is not simply bouncing back or pushing through. It's pressing forward with grace. And I love that phrase, to press forward with grace, a recognition that Jesus has me. Like, I just always tell our congregation, is like, the beauty of Psalm 23 isn't that Jesus is on the other side of the valley of deep darkness, like a corn maze. You made it. Like, it is the reality that the comfort, I really appreciate you got that. It is the reality that the good shepherd is in the deepest of valleys with us. That regular experience of the shepherd taking the sheep through those valleys to the plainlands. And so our anticipation that he's going to actually hold me through something difficult and I can actually be okay. And so learning that in our bodies, and that phrase, unforced rhythms of grace, is our goal. And so three big areas we're going to look at is cultivating resilience in relationship with self, relationship with God, and relationship with others. So first, cultivating resilience in our relationship with self starts with tuning into self. I venture to say most of our struggles is a lack of self-awareness, of a willingness to understand the attrition our bodies and our minds and our souls are experiencing in ministry. Not only naming it, but trying to figure out a way to bring it into the light with others. And so first, it takes actually stopping. So, like, I don't know, again, if you want to throw an Enneagram number, a one, and you struggle with perfectionism and pressing through, you've got to do it. There's got to be a right way. Or it's the reality that you grew up in a military family and we strap our boots and we keep marching, we press on. Whatever reason it may be that you have begun to feel like you cannot stop. Now, we could pause and come up with a million, yeah, but you don't know my story. You don't know what I'm in right now. You don't know why I have to keep pressing on and just pedal to the metal. Like, church planners, like, there's a reality. You're like, well, I'm in a season. This season will end. Well, you know, there's a meme that's like, you know, adulthood is saying, if I can just get through the next 2 weeks for the rest of eternity. So our challenge is to be honest with ourselves and first stopping. And we'll talk about Sabbath rest in a minute. But second, in that stopping, asking questions, being curious of what's happening inside of me. If you're any Ted Lasso fans, you think about Ted Lasso using that Walt Whitman quote of be curious, not judgmental. Like, we actually hold ourselves in so much contempt. When we begin to see weakness or struggle, we begin to think we don't have what it takes. And instead of being curious of why this is impacting me, what else could be going on, what underneath the surface, whether this touches on my family story, whether this touches on a past incident, or whether this just touches a deep insecurity and a struggle, like, we don't want to be curious. We instead want to try to hide it, cover it, or move on in distraction past it. And so first it starts not only with stopping, but being curious. And I love this Romans 2:4 mentality. Dan Allender always kind of talks about, like, you know, why is it, you know, using this verse of thinking of how is it that we can walk in kindness towards ourselves. When Paul says, why do you hold the kindness of the Lord with contempt? The NIV there. Do you not notice the kindness of the Lord that leads to repentance? Not the judgment of the Lord, not the beating you over the head, but is the kindness and in enduring steadfast love of the Lord that leads to repentance. So in some ways, one of the ways that we have to tune into ourselves at times is borrowing the Lord's posture towards us in moments of our deepest weakness, meaning he's not looking at you going, didn't I give you enough chances? Didn't I train you? Didn't I send you to seminary? Didn't I put all these resources around you? But he is a father who catches every one of your tears, Paul says in Psalm 56:8. He keeps count of every one of your tossings. And so how is it that in my struggle that I can stop, I can be curious, and I can actually take the posture of the Father towards me of kindness as I'm beginning to wrestle with what's really going on?
Let me just observe. I think for a lot of you, you have that posture toward the people you're ministering to, and yet you might not have it towards yourself. And so I think it's really hard, because Dan Allender likes to say, like, you can't do for others what you haven't experienced yourself. But I actually think a lot of people in ministry go, oh, no, actually, I give a lot of kindness to the people around me that I never turn on myself. Mm-hmm. I do think Dan Allender's right about one thing. I'm just going to change one word. You can't sustain kindness to others if you can't give it to yourself. And so that's what we're talking about in resilience, is sustaining these things. So here's a tool I like to give. It's one of the first things I give people, particularly if they're in any form of burnout. Y'all know it and love it. Come on, we're PCA. We love the feeling wheel, don't we? So if we're going to stop and we're going to get curious, the first thing that's going to happen, I think, is we're going to start to feel these feelings that we've been trying to ignore for a long time. And maybe you're going to feel them in your body's response, or maybe you're going to feel them and experience them as emotions. Brené Brown is a researcher. She says that Americans have an emotional vocabulary for three emotions. Y'all know what they are? Happy, sad, mad. And I would add, I think there's a fourth. I think the fourth one is fear. Happy, sad, mad, afraid. Right? But that's the level to which we can express how we're feeling. So I give this to people all the time. I say, start at the inner circle here. That's what you're familiar with. But if you're feeling sad, can you go out here and get more of the word granular? Can you get more particular about how you're feeling? And I love for people to use this in a variety of ways. I love for you to use it in your quiet time. And ask yourself, before you enter prayer, how am I feeling today? Or what were two things that I felt yesterday? And maybe give two or three sentences to the Lord about what that was. I feel really isolated because I felt like two people walked away when I went up to talk to them. And it just left me feeling alone. I feel really disappointed because people who I thought were my friends really don't feel like they're sticking by me in this hard season. So not only naming the emotion, but naming two or three sentences about how you experienced that feeling. You can do that in your time with the Lord. You can do that in your own personal journaling. You can do that with a spouse or a trusted friend. And I love this if you've got kids around the dinner table, to ask them not just how was your day, but like, how are you? And let's name two feeling words you experienced today. If you are techie and you would rather use an app, there's an app for that. It's called How We Feel. And one thing that I like about the feeling wheel is it's pretty low tech. You can do it around the dinner table. The reason I like How We Feel is because you can track your emotions. You can have it prompt you as many times a day as you would like, and it will ask you how you feel, and it will say, are you feeling high energy pleasant or high energy unpleasant? And you can mark the emotion. You can put a note as to what that, how you're experiencing that feeling. And here's why I like it. We often fool ourselves into thinking we're in a different emotional frame of mind than we are. And this will track how we self-reported say we feel over a certain period of time. So I have many people look back at, you know, 2 weeks between a counseling session and go, I had no idea I was feeling this depressed. I had no idea that anger was so much a part of my daily experience. And because they were tracking it and able to see patterns, they could see it right there in the app. And then the other thing we said, feel, and then identify the story you are believing. So we love to talk about God's big story, and we love to talk about how does my story fit into God's story. We're all believing stories, and particularly in ministry, I think we're telling stories about ourselves that aren't true. We're telling stories about who we are and how we're performing and all these things, and most of these stories could be coming from the congregations we're ministering in, but most likely they're coming from back in our families, and they're getting repeated in our congregations. They're getting repeated on our church staff, and they feel really familiar. And I think it's really important to begin to investigate the stories that we're believing about ourselves and how they keep coming up again and again. And oftentimes this is going to take unpacking someone with a trusted friend or a counselor.
So good. I'll kind of fly through this. Also recognizing that God, the first thing he gave us to steward was a body, that we have been made not only in the image of God, but with a physical body to steward, and recognizing that there is an element of what does that mean to experience rest, exercise, good sleep, good nutrition, being outside, experiencing the wholeness of God's creation, and recognize that ministry flows for embodied presence, meaning like I can't force that idea of being present with you if my actual physical presence is decaying. And so we actually struggle to match up the theology that we're speaking with our lips with actually the theology we're embodying and experiencing. How has God cared about the body he has made, and what does it mean for it to be restored and cared for?
Okay, this is my other favorite tool, and this may seem like a lot of information on one thing, but Adam said earlier, God's given us this central nervous system, and it is our warning system. It tells us when our bodies are dysregulated. It is what God's designed for us to know how to survive dangerous situations. And so Dan Siegel created this window of tolerance. And the window of tolerance is this place in our nervous system where we feel like we can handle life stressors. We can handle what's going on. The window of tolerance is where we're going to be able to reason well, connect with others, have creativity. This is like the sweet spot. But often things happen. We're triggered. And I know that's a big word, but that is the word. Where we experience things that put us into fight, flight. Now they've added fawn and fix. Lots of F's. So that's that hyper arousal where our nervous system is ready to be able to defend ourselves. But oftentimes what we're experiencing, where we trick ourselves into thinking nothing's wrong with you, is we're experiencing that hyper arousal in everyday events, and we don't know why. And we tell ourselves a story, something's wrong with me. When really what the story we need to begin to ask is, what is happening? Curiosity and kindness. What's happening with me that I would be reacting this way? Not what's wrong with me, but somebody said, what's happened to me? And then a lot of times, if we've spent enough time in hyperarousal and we go up, 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 eventually we're going to go down. And we go into hypoarousal. That's the freeze, collapse, numb, overwhelm. And that's that feeling of like we feel disconnected from all of life. We begin to shut down. And so here's what I like to say. It is not a sin to be out of your window of tolerance. It is the body doing what it's designed to do. Will you sin out of your window of tolerance, or could you? Yes, a lot of us do and will. But it is not a sin for your body to respond the way God designed it to. So we have to stop holding that in contempt and begin asking ourselves, what's happening? And how do I care for that? because the point of the window of tolerance is we will not bootstrap ourselves into increasing our window of tolerance. The nervous system does not respond to bullying. The only way that we're going to be able to expand our window of tolerance is to create care around what triggered us. More rest, exercise, engagement with beauty, good community, all these things we're talking about today. Those are the things that help our nervous system recover from that stimulus and be able to grow our window of tolerance.
And so with that, developing rhythms of rest, and Sabbath is obviously what the Lord has given us. And as one author said, it's the one command that we most easily abandon as an actual command of Scripture, that we would actually see it as a suggestion. Like the Lord said, if you get around to it, Sabbath. But the reality is we have been hardwired for rest, meaning God has made us to recognize He is God and we are not. And so our bodies are finite. And the story of creation is one that rhythms rest before work and has a day of rest for His people. Like our experience is one of rest, not just that we earn our rest, but actually that we experience this gift of rest to remember that we need God and we have limits. And as Kelly Capick says, it is not a sin that you are finite. And yet we feel like it is a flaw that I can't do more. So with that, we want to create, or we want to recognize how God has made us with limits, seek rhythms of rest, and particularly to protect Sabbath. And I love this quote, from Archibald Hart that, Paul Joyner again used in our, cohorts was, "People in a hurry don't allow time for their complex bodies and minds to become revitalized. So they accelerate the wear and tear of their bodies. There's no time for contemplation or even meditation. Anxiety increases and they lose perspective on their problems because they don't have time to think constructively. This makes them even more stressed and less able to cope with the strains of life." And so the reality is that we are squeezing every bit of life, expecting there always to be more, and not actually looking at how the Lord would call us to be sustained in Him. And I know I broke the cardinal rule of so much text on one slide, so we followed it up with smaller ones. So here again, following that is not only Sabbath, but recognizing rule of life, recognizing growth habits, patterns and commitments that help produce more healthy patterns and rhythms in life. And I pull a lot of material from some stuff that Paul Joyner has collected for Geneva Benefits. But one of the things that has been big for me is cultivating the in-between times. Most of us stack our schedules in such a way there's no space, no margin, that we go from one stressor to the next, not realizing, again, the cumulative impact of holding everybody's stories in our bodies. And so one is cultivating in between times, creating margin and space to recognize, God, what is happening in me? What is happening as I respond to this person? If you're anything like me, sometimes you respond, then an hour later you go, what did I just say to that person? And why did it come out like that? And will they ever come back again? And that we don't recognize that the cumulative impact of all of the stories we're engaging with actually is impacting us. So creating in-between times, recognizing the need for exercise, getting outside, planning for loving union with the Lord, a protecting sustained time to draw near to the Lord, to receive His goodness and care, to hear from Him. To plan for loving union with family and friends, recognizing I was made for meaningful community, not one-way transactional leadership or impact in people's lives. And so there's tons of resources on this and just the practical nature of this that, again, we'll put in our resource page.
So the next one we want to talk about is in cultivating our relationship to God is recognizing our griefs. I just think we don't talk about this enough in ministry because I think we tend to think grief and we immediately think death. Like a death of a person. And I really love Francis Weller's book, The Wild Edge of Sorrow. He has these five gates of grief. I'm just going to go through them quickly, but I highly recommend this book. And we have some others in our resource list on grief. But he says we'll lose everything we love, we'll lose. The places within us that haven't known love, we need to grieve. The sorrows of the world, we need to grieve. What we expect but didn't receive. We just can't hear, I think, for most people in ministry. What we expected ministry to be, what we expected from our church people, what we expected from friends, what we expected from our church leadership. And then generational and collective grief. I think as pastors and ministry leaders, we experience each one of these every day. And yet, we don't even have mechanisms to even know how to work out our grief. Thankfully, the American church is starting to talk about lament in really healthy ways. But one of the things I tell people in counseling all the time is engage your grief in two ways. Engage it spontaneously. When it comes, let yourself feel it. And engage it intentionally. And that's what we're going to talk about here, how we engage grief intentionally.
Yeah, again, I really love that the church has grown to become reacquainted with the language of lament, because I grew up never really hearing it and then beginning to recognize, like, God has given us this beautiful language to confess our griefs. And like this weekend, I even preached a sermon just on the idea of confession, how formative it is, but the trinity of confession of sin, confession of grief, and confession of faith. I venture to say we don't see lament as true confession, meaning we agree with God that I am existing in a broken world and it impacts me in ways that I need his care. And so as we think about the role of confession and lament, confession of sin reminds us we're sinners. Confession of grief reminds us we're sufferers. And confession of faith reminds us we're saints. And so to take that language of David Pallison, of saint, sinner, sufferer, it is one of the ways that we so reorient our identity to the reality of who we are in Christ as a saint, sinner, and sufferer, is to practice not just confession of sin, but confession of our griefs as well, to lament, to be honest with the Lord, and to learn that language of lament. And so Alex has three very specific practices of that.
So process journaling is my favorite tool of all time for all of counseling, because it takes lament and it takes it just a little bit further. Some people call this the Psalm 88 journaling, like the no holds barred, don't even have to bring yourself back to hope, right? But my clients like to call it the burn journal, because that's what we do. We write this journal and we intentionally destroy it when we're done. And it's very important to destroy it, because this is the journal you do not want your children to find when you die, right? And so your brain needs to know that no one is ever going to see it, because this is the place you say it all. I do not know a group of people on this planet who need a place to be able to say it all like ministry leaders, right? I'm talking about the things you're not allowed to say, like, how could you put me with these people? I hate so-and-so, and the cuss words, right? I'm really serious. We have to have a place. And here's the thing. People come back all the time and they say to me, I don't think I'm allowed to say this to God. And I say, without missing a beat, do you think he doesn't know? Right? He already knows. So let's say it to him, because here's what's more important than you saying it. It's you saying it in his presence and realizing that you're allowed to be that messy with him. Like, that's what the gospel means, is I don't have to clean myself up when I go tell him how hard this is. I can say it in the really raw, unfiltered way. And then I go to my kitchen sink and I burn it so nobody else can see it, because they don't like that part of me that's that messy, right? And so I love this activity. I think that in my recovery from ministry, I was probably process journaling 4 or 5 times a week. I really felt like there was a literal weight on my chest that would not get smaller. And after days and then weeks and then months of doing this, the weight started to release. Like, the pressure in my chest began to let go. The other two things were centering prayer and solitude practices. These were, my counselor challenged me to do this. He said, Alex, you need to experience the Ephesians 2, 8, and 9 of prayer. You don't have to do anything when you pray. You don't even have to lament if you don't want to. You don't have to intercede. You don't have to give thanks. You can just sit in the presence of Jesus. And you need to experience that. And so centering prayer and practices of just quiet and solitude, of just remembering that he is with me, really began to help me. I will tell you this. If you do it, the grief will come. You won't have to go looking for it. When we get still and when we get quiet, it's amazing what begins to bubble up. You're not doing it wrong. You're actually doing something right. It's going to feel really wrong, because a lot of stuff's going to come up that you don't want to feel. But I would just say keep going, because if it's bubbling up, you're doing it right.
And one of the phrases we like to use is we want to practice the presence of the Lord. You hear that Brother Lawrence language, but we want to practice being aware that no matter what, the Lord is with me, He goes before me. And so that's the rhythm that we're talking about with some of these practices. And I love these quotes from Kelly Capick's, honest lament and mourning can allow us to receive hope and be open to God's presence in a way that appears impossible without such genuine acknowledgement of the questions and hurt. Hope comes to us not by denying and downplaying our pain, but by acknowledging it before God who abounds in compassion. This is the truly human story. To understand the Christian story is to recognize that we confess both grief and hope, sin and faithfulness, struggle and promise. And so this, for time's sake, these last few things, just recognizing one, for those in ministry, one of the things that's going to be a huge challenge is continuing to come back to your why. To almost in some ways to revisit and reaffirm your calling of how is it that the Lord has done this, because what we're experiencing creates such doubt and confusion and question about, am I doing this wrong? Is it supposed to be this hard? And the reality of oftentimes we have that question because we have not been honest about the impact it's had along the way. And then we talked about journaling, retreats, silence. I want to give a plug here. One of the realities that we need is shepherds, meaning shepherds need shepherds. Ministry leaders need to realize that you too need others investing in your own life and places to process what's been hard, to envision a way forward, that somebody that can help you dream when you're struggling to dream well, to have vision where you can only see fog. And so Geneva Benefits is something I'm going through right now, that we have several pastor cohorts, and they're launching more, I think, in January. So I asked Paul, can I go ahead and like give a plug for that? And he said, absolutely. But several of us have been able to, Keaton here, to be a part of something just really beautiful where you hear other people share similar struggles and not go, don't you know what you were supposed to, you know the book you were supposed to read? You know what you're really supposed to go to? You're supposed to go to Adam's seminar. No, like the reality is sitting with other people, lamenting together and experiencing the embodied love of Jesus with other people who are struggling in the suffering and sin of this world. And so I cannot push you enough to the reality of seeking soul friendship, spiritual directors, therapists, whatever it is. But I would strongly push you towards something in the form of a cohort, of a group of people who can walk with you. And this, we'll kind of end with, you want to just fly through this and just give your...
I mean, I'm a counselor. I cannot do a talk without talking about boundaries. So I just want to say real quickly, like, I think so many of us in ministry have come to believe this lie that we're allowed to live unboundaried, that we're allowed to live in a way that doesn't remember that we're frail and finite creatures, and that boundaries really are an invitation to other people into God's wisdom, into how we treat other image bearers and how we acknowledge their finiteness. And they are also a reminder that there's only one God. And so I think we need to continue to talk about what boundaries look like. Yes, it's got to be held in tension with what a sacrifice look like, right? But how do we keep talking in these places that Adam's talking about, in community that's safe for us, about what good boundaries look like for us?
And so again, in some ways, the summary could almost be Sabbath and story. Of understanding your need for rest, rhythms of rest, knowing what is it that I need on a daily, weekly, monthly, yearly basis to receive the care of the Lord in a way that would allow me to endure the valleys that we're experiencing on a regular basis, but also to ask the question of what really is restoring to my mind and body? What are the things that I actually need in place, some of those rules of life and rhythms that would actually grow me, help me, and experience life, but also to know your story, to know the narratives that shape our life, to know the things that actually impact the way we are responding in the moment without even thinking about it, the narratives that have become so loud that they shape our willingness to override this very system inside of us God has given us to tell us to stop, pause, and rest.
So for me, as I said, what kind of made me pull the plug on my ministry job was my body began to shut down, and my counselor challenged me about 6 to 9 months before I quit my job to do one thing, and it was take a 24-hour Sabbath. And my first response was, there's no way I can do that. I wear 5 different hats. I can't do any of them well. There's no way I can take a Sabbath. He said, take a half a day. And he knew what he was doing, one, because I was disobeying God's command, but two, because as soon as I got still is when, like I said, I began to know what was happening in my body, and it's when the emotion began to bubble up, and all the lies and the stories that I was telling myself about my essentialness to this ministry and all that I was needed to do and all that I was supposed to do for other people, like, it began to be revealed very quickly. And so I just want to reiterate, like, if you put any of these practices into place in the next couple of weeks, you are going to think you're doing it wrong at first, because it's going to reveal things about your own heart. It's going to reveal things in your body. It might even reveal things in your relationships. And I just encourage you to stay there and get curious. Get really kind of what's happening, and just continue to ask the Holy Spirit to continue to reveal to you what He wants to show you, because your story will start to come out the more you get still. And so, like I said, we thrown a lot at you fast, just like drinking from a fire hydrant. Pick one or two things that you feel like you can fit into this season of ministry and see where it takes you.
So this QR code is a Google Doc just full of links to articles, podcasts, those process journals, a burnout inventory, which is super fun to take, that we did as a part of our cohort as well. Like, nobody takes and is like, yeah, pass. Usually you're like, oh my gosh, how am I life? And so all of this is just resources. And if there's anything that we can help with, we'd love to connect with you. And we broke the rule and went over time. So I want to close this, but I actually do want to, if anybody wants to stay in here, to still take questions.